I'm Bob Franklin. Today on Like It Is, remembering Denise LaSalle, a legendary vocalist and lyricist born on a plantation July 16, 1934, in Cedron, LaFleur County, Mississippi. In this encore Like It Is interview, I travel to Jackson, Tennessee to talk with Miss LaSalle. My guest today is award-winning singer, songwriter, Miss Denise LaSalle. Miss LaSalle, thank you for being a guest today.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Absolutely. For those who may not know Miss LaSalle, we're going to have her tell us a little bit about how she got started, where she got started, and who were some of her inspirations along the way. So take it away, Miss LaSalle. Who were some of your people who inspired you?
Oh, wow. It's so many. I hate to go back that far, but I'd like to say that one of the persons that I really, really grew up loving and even tried to pattern some of my show after was a sassy lady. Who was she married to? Nipsey Russell? What's the girl name? Now you know you're getting old when you...
That's okay.
Laverne Baker.
Okay.
I think she was married to Nipsey Russell, I believe. Laverne Baker.
Okay.
See, I thought she was one of the sassiest ladies on stage, you know, back in the day when you weren't allowed to be too sassy, but just a little bit risque. That's my girl.
Okay. And you like her risque style?
Yeah.
And your singing style. You have a powerful voice, beautiful voice. Did that come natural?
I believe so.
Did you, as some singers sang in the choir, church choir?
Family, my whole family were perpetual singers, and most of them didn't make a living at it, but we just sort of did it, you know, for the fun of it. And my mother couldn't sing at all. I mean, her voice was terrible, but she was always singing. But my father was a muddy water kind of dude. And you hear him sing, and he would sing the blues, but he would hide it from us. We didn't know it was the blues. He'd sing one line now, and about 15 minutes later, he'd do another line. But if you follow him around and listen real close, he was singing the blues, you know. That's the way my daddy was. But they raised us up in church, and they tried to teach us to that way, and these were the things to do. And they called blues, in those days, they called them reels. And I suppose it came from reel to reel, you know. I guess that's where they get that from. You shouldn't sing them reels, girl. I have to laugh about that now when me and my sisters and brothers get to reminiscing about old times, the things they used to call it. But anyway, we were raised up singing in church. My sister and I used to do duets in church. And I never really actually led a song. I was always either with her, with the choir, or with the quartet group. When I moved to Chicago, I got out of the choir and got with a five-girl female group. And we sang all over Chicago and did our thing. We never did record when I was with them, but they did have a recording before I got with them, but I didn't record with them. And then from that group, I started my blues singing. I got sort of discovered by a young man named Billy the Kid Emerson, who used to be a Sun record recording artist back in the 50s and 60s. And I happened to be a songwriter with nobody to give us songs to. I was always writing a song. And I would fool myself. Oh, this song is for Coco Taylor, this song is for Etta James, you know. But I didn't know any of these people. I didn't have no idea I'd ever meet them, you know. But I would just write the song and pattern the song for that person, their style of singing the way I wanted it to be. And I happened to get a job as a barmaid at Mix's Lounge in Chicago. And all the patrons around the place and the people worked there, they would kind of laugh at me. I know they were making fun of me, being, you know, writing something and saying a little bit and writing a little. What are you doing? What are you doing? Oh, I'm writing a song. Who are you writing it for? I'm writing it for so-and-so. You know, I had some famous person, but the famous person never got the song, you know. And so they kind of made making fun of me, I'm sure. But I don't worry about that because it all paid off in the end. One day, one of the guys said, it's a famous guy come in here, Denise. Say, you know the guy that made the whip? You make the trip, I'll pop the whip. I said, yeah. He said, Billy the Kid Emerson comes in here every day and drink after you leave. Because I left at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. He said, after you leave, he comes in the afternoon. If you stay, I'll introduce you to him. So I sat around that one evening, played the jukebox until he walked in. He walked in, they introduced us. And he said, well, can you sing the song? I said, yes. He said, well, I'll take you over to a piano and we'll make a tape of it. And I'll take it down to Chess for you. And he was looking at this little fine, pretty girl, that's all. I could tell that old man, he wasn't interested in my song. He really was not. He was interested in this big hip gal, which I was at the time. And he took the song over there and took it down to Chess. The guy at Chess said, bring her down. And he asked me to go, I went. They offered me a contract right then and there. And I turned it down.
Why?
I said, I've never sung by myself, and I'm afraid. He said, well, you're doing all right with that one, so, you know, might as well. I was scared to death. I went back home, and I thought about it. It's a young man used to come in the bar, sit and talk to me all the time. Seemed to have been very religious and quiet. We used to talk about God and church and stuff like that. So finally one day he said, you know, you need to pray about that. He said, because you're always talking about how the job, kind of job I had was hurting me, working on my feet. It was one of the things that kept me down all the time and running to the doctor. And so I did pray and asked the Lord to show me a better way to make a living. I had done that. You know, I'd been praying like that. And one night I was laying in my bed. And this is the whole truth, and, you know, I'm telling you just like it happened. I was laying in my bed one night, and I felt the weight of someone sat on my bed. And it was just as real as you and I sitting here now. I felt my bed go down. And you know, you ever had a nightmare where you try to open your eyes, and you try to, if you move, you think you could wake up? I wanted to wake up, see who was in my room, because I lived alone, okay? So I'm struggling trying to get my eyes open. I couldn't. I mean, couldn't move a muscle. And someone said to me, you've prayed and asked for a better way to make a living. Now I've shown you won't take it. And that is a fact. Just as clear. And the minute that was said, my eyes flew open and I was mobile. I jumped up and ran all through the house trying, well, who was, you know, in my mind, I'm going, who was that? What was that? You know, and I couldn't sleep anymore. And the next day, when I went to my job, this guy named was Jock Halfacre. I never will forget that. He came in the store, and I told him about that thing. He said, well, I'm going to ask you a question now. I said, "Look." He said, who did you pray and ask for a better way to make a living? Was it Satan or was it God? I said, well, I asked God. He said, well, then who you think was sitting on the bed talking to you? I guess God, I guess, you know. And he said, you think about that. And I did. And I called Billy and asked him, either he came down and shot, I forgot which one. But I asked, told him to take me back to Chess. I went back down there. I signed the contract with them. And that was the beginning. They cut a couple of demos on me. They never cut a record. They just cut a couple of demos. They had some music that was already on tape. They pulled another singer's voice off, put mine on there just to see what I sound like doing these songs. So they never got around to it. They told, it's a guy named Maurice McAllister was writing songs for Etta James and all those people there. They asked him to write me some songs. He wrote a song called We're Gonna Make It. The same one Lil Milton cut. Mm-hmm. He said he wrote it for Millie Collier or somebody. And he wouldn't give it to me. I don't think he believed in me at all, but he wouldn't give me any of his songs. I didn't get not one of his songs. And then I had some songs. They didn't cut mine either. But they kind of was partial to his songs, you know, and because he was writing nothing but hit records. So anyway, they never recorded me. And after 1 year, my contract was for 1 year. After 1 year went by, they didn't record me. I got a release for my contract. And then they wanted to, when I asked for the release, I wrote them a letter that I'm gone. Contract's up, I'm gone. And then they wanted me to stay, and they're willing to cut a record on me. I said, no, gave you 1 year, you didn't cut it, I'm gone. Then Billy Emerson had a song called A Love Reputation. He recorded that song, A Love Reputation. He recorded that song on me, and that song became a number one hit record in Chicago. Number one in Chicago, you know. I would say not number one. Second to Aretha Franklin's Respect. Respect was number one.
Yes.
Mine was number two right behind hers for 5 weeks. And so I consider that number one.
That's not a bad act to be following.
That might call me a little loose. Some of y'all might even call me a hoe. But I want to give you a little history on me. Now, this is something I think you all should know. I got a love reputation known all over this world. I'm a hijacker, a safe cracker. I'll steal your man, little girl. Record in Chicago, number one in Chicago, you know. I would say not number one, second to Aretha Franklin's Respect. Respect was number one.
Yes.
Mine was number two right behind hers for 5 weeks. And so I consider that number one.
That's not a bad act to be following.
I tell you now, that's a nice act to follow. And so I got that started just like that. And from that point on, that was as far as I got right then. This was 1967. when that happened. I didn't get another hit on me. I recorded several other songs, never got another hit. But I did write a hit record for Bill Coday, 1969, Get Your Life Straight. Then I wrote a song, 1970, called Hey Romeo, for a female group called The Sequins. And they went all the way to the top, number one, you know, worked at Apollo Theater and just moved around. As it went down, I finally went back in the studio one day and cut a record that turned out to be a big record in Chicago. Not my smash, but it was good enough for Westbound Records in Detroit to take a liking to it because it went to number one in Detroit. And it's called Hunger Me Strung Out. And they signed me, purchased the master on Hunger Me Strung Out. And they made it a pretty big record, national. But it didn't go all the way. And they said, well, Denise, we almost got a smash out of that one. Tell you what we're going to do. We're going to send you some money. You go back in the studio and down in Memphis and come back again with another one. So they sent me some money. I went to Memphis and cut my first gold record, Trapped by a Thing Called Love. When I got back, matter of fact, I was working at a department store, not a department, a grocery store in Chicago at the time, called Dale Farm Supermarket. I was cashier there, listening to my songs on radio. I'm in the cashier, saying, what are you doing in here? You know, I said, till I get a hit record, I'll be here, you know. And when I went to Memphis and cut Trapped by a Thing Called Love, I took a leave of absence to go do it. I never went back. I knew the day I cut it. When I cut that record that day, I said, this is it. This is my hit record. And I don't have to go back to the place. I came back to Chicago, rest in peace. I got smashed.
What was the inspiration behind Trapped by a Thing Called Love?
I was trapped by a thing called love. Believe me. You want to know his name? Bill Jones. That was my husband, my first. I was trapped.
Somebody tell me, what has this man got? He makes me feel what I don't want to feel. And somebody tell me, what has this man got? He makes me give what I don't want to give. On solid ground, I feel myself sinking fast. I grab a hold, but I don't think it's gonna last. I'm slowly losing my ground, slowly sinking out. I'm trapped by this thing they call love. Oh, baby.
So when you are performing, is that a form of release, creative release? How is it when you're performing?
A trap by a thing called love?
Yes, or any of or any of
when
your music.
When I'm performing, I mean, it's what I love to do. It's what I love to do, and I'm at home with it, you know. I feel more at home doing that than anything else I know. That and in the kitchen, cooking.
Yes, and
Those are my two great loves.
I should remind our listeners, we are at your restaurant here in
Cafe.
All right, in Jackson, Tennessee.
That's
and
right.
We're going to get into a little bit of the recipes that are on the menu here a bit later, but I want to stay on the musical track now a bit longer. In terms of rejection.
If I'm not mistaken, it was Trapped by a Thing Called Love, I believe it was. When I went to Willie Mitchell's studio in Memphis to record, it was called High Records at the time, with Al Green and Ann Peeble and all of them. Ann Peeble hadn't had but one big record, I think it was Part-Time Love. I think she had an up-tempo version of Confine Me a Part-Time Love. Willie Mitchell pulled five or six $100 bills, I forgot which one it was, out of his pocket and said, Denise, I want to buy this song from you. I'll give you this money right now. Buy this song. I want this song for Ann Peeble. I said, no, Willie, I wrote this for me. He said, you ain't going to do nothing but F this song up. Because he didn't believe in me. He didn't think I had what it took. And he said, you ain't going to F this song up. He said, take this money and let me bring this song home for you. I said, well, he kind of made me angry. And I told him, I said, let me tell you one thing. I wrote this song. It's mine. If I F it up, it's mine to F up. Now, if Ann Peeble want to hit record, write her one or let her write her own, because this is mine. And Willie and I was friends up until the day he died. We became fast friends. I guess he, you know, respect me for sticking to my gun, but I just felt that way about it. And I cut my own song, turned gold, went straight to gold, you know. So that was one of my rejections. And I've got several other rejections, but they're too numerous to talk about because I didn't even remember. They didn't bother me enough to stick around, but that one stuck. That one stuck because it hurt me badly. You know, the other rejection didn't matter that much, but that really kind of hurt me when Willie did that to me, you know. But I don't let it bother me anymore because, you know, I think what happened, you know, made up for the rejection, you know. I felt vindicated.
I know you're a Mississippi woman, a Mississippi
right.
lady.
Still got the mud on my shoes.
Do you call upon those Mississippi roots to sustain you as you receive rejection and were able to overcome them? Is it anything that you can credit growing up being a Mississippi
yes.
lady? What is that?
Growing up with a Christian family, my mom and dad were very devout Christian people. And they taught me certain ways. They taught me to rely on God. And whatever you do, take God with you. Don't matter what it is you do. And I always felt a lot of people say, well, you know you're wrong for singing the blues. You know God's not going to bless you. You know you're going to hell alone. You're saying, I said, well, I tell you what. If I'm going to hell for singing the blues, hell is where I'm going. I said, because I feel this way. God gave me this talent. And God let me use it. Because I never will forget that I prayed and asked the Lord for this. And I said, he gave it to me. Whenever he's ready to stop me, he can stop me anytime. If he doesn't want me doing this, all he has to do is take my voice away or take whatever he wants from me. And that's it. Or don't let my record be a hit. He doesn't have to let my records appeal to other people, but I pray to him. When I go in the studio and record, I pray that whatever I do, I know I don't have the greatest voice in the world. I don't have an Aretha Franklin voice. Where else will you find a young lady from Mississippi, half educated, grew up in the country, don't know nothing, ain't never been nowhere, never done nothing in her life, would attain the success that I got without that big outside help? I've never had a manager. I've never had anybody that guided my career. Where else would you find this mediocre voice that you listen to on the records? God gave me something to say. I attribute my success to my writing, mainly. And by me writing it in my heart, I know how to get that song, that story told, that touches the heart of other women or people like me who want to say. I try to write what I feel like women want to say and can't find the words to say them, or what people want to say and can't find the words to say them. I have the courage to say it on record. And so when I do it, I always pray to God that he'll let my words touch the heart of millions.
Aura Denise Allen, known by the stage name Denise LaSalle, was an American blues, R&B, and soul singer, songwriter, record producer. She passed away in 2018. I'm Bob Franklin. I'll be back next week with 30 more minutes of good conversation on another edition of Like It Is.
She's on the other side of the track, the rich folk side of town. I've been noticing the change in you every time that you come home. You criticize everything I do, then you leave me all alone. If you wanna leave me, I step aside and let you go. You see, I'm not the kind of woman who begs, but I just wanna know, is she gonna put up with your unlovable habits? The way you snore and bite your nails, the way your fucking feet smell. Is she gonna put up with the invisible you? She be waiting when you don't come home at all? Will she accept your lame excuses when you don't even call? Will she love your other kids by your woman out in the streets? Get up and reheat your meal when you don't come home to eat. Now I know I don't have nothing but a whole lot of she do the thing I do. Is she gonna put up with your unlovable habits? The way you pick your nose, throw your clothes on the floor. Is she gonna put up with the invisible you? You snore and bite your nails, the way your fucking feet smell. Is she gonna put up with the invisible you? All the promises you break, all the things you'll never ever do. Your nails, the way your fucking feet smell. Is she gonna put up with the invisible you?
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.